Now, a man named Lazarus was sick. He was from Bethany, the village of Mary and her sister Martha. So the sisters sent word to Jesus, "Lord, the one you love is sick." When he heard this, Jesus said, "This sickness will not end in death. No, it is for God's glory, so that God's Son may be glorified through it." So when he heard that Lazarus was sick, he stayed where he was 2 more days. And then he said to his disciples, "Let us go back to Judea." "But Rabbi," they said, "a short while ago the Jews there tried to stone you, and yet you are going back?" After he had heard this, he went on to tell them, "Our friend Lazarus has fallen asleep, but I am going to wake him up." His disciples replied, "Lord, if he sleeps, he will get better." Jesus had been speaking of his death, but his disciples thought he meant natural sleep. So then he told them plainly, "Lazarus is dead, and for your sake, I am glad I was not there, so that you may believe. But let us go to him." On his arrival, Jesus found that Lazarus had already been in the tomb for 4 days. When Martha heard that Jesus was coming, she went out to meet him, but Mary stayed at home. "Lord," Martha said to Jesus, "if you had been there, my brother would not have died. But I know that even now, God will give you whatever you ask." Jesus said to her, "I am the resurrection and the life. The one who believes in me will live even though they die. And whoever lives by believing in me will never die. Do you believe this?" "Yes, Lord," she replied. "I believe that you are the Messiah, the Son of God, who is to come into the world." After she said this, she went back and called her sister Mary aside. "The teacher is here," she said, "and he is asking for you." When Mary heard this, she got up quickly and went to him. When Mary reached the place where Jesus was and saw him, she fell at his feet and said, "Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died." When Jesus saw her weeping, and the Jews had come along with her also weeping, he was deeply moved in spirit and troubled. "Where have you laid him?" he asked. "Come and see, Lord," they replied. Jesus wept. Jesus, once more deeply moved, came to the tomb. It was a cave with a stone laid across the entrance. "Take away the stone," he said. "But Lord," said Martha, the sister of the dead man, "by this time there is a bad odor, for he has been in there 4 days. Then Jesus said, "Did I not tell you that if you believe, you will see the glory of God?" So they took away the stone. Then Jesus looked up and said, "Father, I thank you that you have heard me." When he had said this, Jesus called out in a loud voice, "Lazarus, come out!" The dead man came out, his hands wrapped with strips of linen and a cloth around his face. Jesus said to them, "Take off the grave clothes and let him go."
Welcome to KC, everybody. Happy Easter weekend. I am so glad that you are tuning in with us wherever you are. My name is Chris. I am the lead pastor at the church and just glad that you are here. If we were here in person, I would say he is risen and the church would say, oh, he is risen indeed. What a fantastic day. There's nothing like Easter weekend. Every Sunday is Easter Sunday in the fact that we celebrate the resurrection, but there's something different about this weekend. This is the weekend where you put a little extra syrup on your waffles. This is the weekend where you get into a suit. This is the weekend where you turn your volume up to 11. This may even be the weekend where you wash all of your face masks because it is Easter weekend and he is risen and he is risen indeed. So grateful that you're here. If you're just checking this out, this is kind of your thing to do on Easter weekend and you're doing it online. Thank you for being here. And I would just say the resurrection of Jesus demands your interest. So I'm so glad that you are here. And what a time to be living. What a time to be alive right now. We live right now in a time of just so much bad news of vaccines and variants. And I think what you need, and I know what I need, is in this bad news world, we need some good news. We need some good news in a bad news world. And that is what Jesus offers you and I today. So thanks for being here. You just heard a really awesome reading of John chapter 11, and that's where we're going to be. I'd invite you, if you have your Bibles, I want to show you around just what is going on. Because what's going on here is there's good news in a bad news situation. There's good news in a bad news situation. So what we're going to do is we're going to look at just the reality of kind of the context of what was going on and just trace out a little bit this bad news, this experience that you and I even are living in today. So with your Bibles open, John chapter 11, here is how it goes. In verse 17, it says, on his arrival, Jesus found that Lazarus had already been in the tomb for 4 days. Now, Bethany was less than 2 miles from Jerusalem, and many Jews had come to Martha and Mary to comfort them in the loss of their brother. The scene that we are invited into is a funeral procession. In Jewish custom, a funeral would last 7 days. They are 4 days into it. The tears on the cheeks of Mary and Martha, the sisters of the dead man Lazarus, and the community are still wet. They are still sobbing together. They're still reminiscing together. And this is where we find Jesus. In verse 20, it says, when Martha heard of Jesus coming, she went out to meet him, but Mary stayed at home. Lord, Martha said to Jesus, if you would have been here, my brother would not have died. This grieving sister comes to Jesus and asks, where were you? In my greatest time of need, you heard the death of my, that Lazarus was sick. Where were you? Why didn't you come? And this is Martha. If you go down to verse 32, it says, when Mary reached the place where Jesus was and saw him, she fell at his feet. She fell at his feet for maybe a few different reasons. One, because it was Jesus and there's some submission there. But because of the grief, her legs, her knees buckled and she fell in front of Jesus. And she says, Lord, if you would have been here, my brother would not have died. In the middle of all of this, where are you? Where are you? And this is the bad news. It's at a funeral. There's grief and there's crying and there's even anger. And this is the world that you and I experience today. There's a book written a few years ago by Steven Pinker. Steven Pinker is an evolutionary biologist, psychologist. He works at Harvard University. He wrote a book called Enlightenment Now. This was a few years ago, New York Times bestseller. The subtitle was The Case for Humanism, Reason, and Progress. And really the whole book is him setting a trajectory in our world how everything is getting better because of the Enlightenment and all of that stuff, reason, progress, and all these things. And, you know, I read it, and there's a lot in there that I agree with, actually. That things seem to be getting better. You think about medicine. You think about technology. That, yes, there have been improvements in our world that I think we need to celebrate. But here's what Pinker's argument lacked for me. It lacked a language and a system of understanding all of the bad news that you and I know, feel, and experience in our world. And we see this in a macro sense in our world right now, especially right now. We look around in the United States and we see all of the racial injustices and the marches and protests over these things. And what's going on there? Why are we like that? You'd come here to Canada and we still are grieving and processing the murdered missing Indigenous women and all of the injustices of that relationship. We look around and there's human trafficking problems. That these are all these things, even closer, the opioid crisis that we have right now where there is a systemic evil in a tainted drug supply and for profit, people are losing their lives at a young age. And this is the macro things that we all see. Maybe you don't believe me. If you don't believe me, here's my challenge, is simply go on Facebook to any type of opinion piece from any news agency and read the comments. Just read the comments. People are spewing vitriols or keyboard smashing, and I hate, and it's just this, I never read a thread of comments online and feel better afterwards because there's something wrong. There's decay and there's decline. There is rot and there is decrease in our world. That's in a macro sense, but also when you come into a micro sense, kind of your lived experience and my lived experience, like mental health issues that you and I have heard about all the way through this pandemic. There's stuff decay and decline with our body. Our body doesn't work the same way. Our eyes are going, our license is being taken away. There's an early diagnosis of Alzheimer's or cancer or pills or whatever it is, that there's decay and decline. There's rot and decrease in our just our experience. But what about our relationships too? What about all the divorce and custody battles and abuse and abandonment and adultery? What about the relapses that you see with people and their addictions? What about addictions itself, either to a substance or even to a good thing like work? That we use even good things to try to make them ultimate, to try to figure out our existence and make sense of this self. But even between our ears, there's the negative scripts and the self-worth of I'm a failure, the trauma, the hurt, the wounds that we can't get over, that there is in this world decay and decline, rot and decrease. But there's also death. Death, and that's what we're introduced to in John 11. This is the death of Lazarus, the brother of Mary and Martha, and this community is grieving over death. I think this year has been an interesting wake-up call for us in the West. Because of science, because of progress, it's almost this alarming surprise that a pandemic could even be possible. And yet here we are, and our culture has been brought as close to death as we have in recent memory for most of us in our lifetime. That there is a skepticism and awareness that, wait a second, I am vulnerable and I may die. That we've all been to a funeral where our tears have been soaked, our cheeks have been soaked with tears. So I think every worldview, whoever you are tuning in, every worldview has to make sense of the decay, the decline, and the death that you and I experience. Every single worldview has to have an answer for that. You could look at our world as a utopia that everything is getting better, but it wouldn't make sense of your lived experience or mine. And here's what I love about Christianity is it offers you a framework. It offers you a narrative, a story to understand why are things the way they are. And at the heart of the problem is this, that there is a fracture in the cosmos. There's a fracture between us in relationship. There's a fracture of brokenness, even in the way that I relate to myself and my world and people. And the word that the Bible comes to us and gives us is this word sin. Sin, it is a breaking, a fracture, first and foremost, of relationship with God that we were supposed to be in. He created us in his image and loved us, but that has been fractured because of sin. And this is, I think, makes sense of our world. Psychologists will come. Psychologists come and they give us this type of language. They call the human experience the hedonic treadmill. The hedonic treadmill. What that means is simply this, that we as humans chase rainbows. There's a joy, and so we go and there's a new relationship, or there's a new degree, or there's a new child, or a new experience, a new travel, whatever this is. But everything that we experience with joy, it's like trying to hold sand between your fingers. And it doesn't last. So how do you make sense of that? See, Christianity comes and says simply this, that you were made for relationship with God, and any other thing, created thing, will simply not do. That your joy and your happiness is found in him. And this is, I think, the reality that Christianity gives us to make sense of all of the bad news that you and I are living through right now. But the question that the sisters ask, I think, is a poignant one to Jesus. They both ask, where were you? Where were you? If you would have been here, my brother would not have died. And I think that's a great question. God, where are you? In the middle of all of this, God, where are you? In the middle of all the bad news, do you care? And are you with us? John 11 gives us an amazing insight into the emotional life of Jesus. And I want to point out two ways. After this interaction with Mary, in verse 33, it says, when Jesus saw her weeping, this is Mary, and the Jews who had come along with her also weeping, he was deeply moved in spirit and troubled. Where have you laid him? He asked. Come and see, Lord, they replied. Shortest verse in the Bible, folks. Jesus wept. He wept. Jesus was so overcome with this moment of Mary and these people weeping and grieving that Jesus entered into their suffering and he wept along with them. Where is Jesus? Where are you, God, in the middle of this? Christianity says he is with us, crying with us. There's a pastor in New York City. shortly after the events of 9/11, September 11th, the whole city was devastated, looking for answers. Where is God in the middle of this? So his church just blew up. They are having to add service after service. And to a bunch of people living through a bad news, terrible moment, this pastor opened up this scripture in John 11, and he preached this text, and he highlighted these two words, Jesus wept. And here's what he asked. Why would Jesus, knowing what was going to happen, so here's the spoiler alert, Lazarus is raised from the dead, not 10 minutes later. 10 minutes later. Why would Jesus enter into their suffering when he knew what was going to happen? Why? Because Jesus is perfect love, and love demands that love that you come close to those who are in need. And this is what Jesus does. He enters into their suffering. He comes close to them in their bad news world. That's the first one. The second one is in verse 38, just a few verses later. It says, Jesus, once more deeply moved. Again, the emotional life of Jesus, once more deeply moved. We've domesticated that. Another way that you could understand that is that Jesus is roaring and snorting with anger like an animal. That's in the original language. That's another connotation of this, of these words. It's like a lion or a bull. He is bellowing with anger. Some commentators even say that Jesus approaches the tomb of Lazarus yelling at the tomb because he is angry at death and decay and decline. I remember as a young pastor, we were, as a church, the church I was working at, we were hosting a funeral for a teenager. And I wanted to be a part of it just to experience it and just honor this life that was lived. And it was a packed house. I sat at the back. And this teenager had taken their own life. I had never met this person. And I remember at the back just hearing the audible sobs of family members and friends processing the loss. And I remember feeling angry. Not at this person, but at death, at the brokenness of this situation. Why is this happening? Why is this happening? And any event like that, any human has felt that, this anger at death. And here we see Jesus bellowing with anger at death. Where is God in our bad news world? Christianity says, Jesus is God with skin on, and he is with us. And he is with you as you cry, as you mourn, and as you grieve the decay, the decline, and the death, the bad news of our world. This is the hope. But it's not that Jesus is just in it, but also that he is over it. And this is the hope of Easter weekend. This is the hope of Easter weekend. It's not that just there's bad news, because this would be a terrible Easter message if I just ended there. Wah, wah, that's it. No. Because in the middle of this, in his first interaction with Martha, Jesus says to her, I am the resurrection and the life. The one who believes in me will live even though they die. And whoever lives by believing in me will never die. Do you believe this? In the middle of the bad news, Jesus cuts through with good news. And he says, I am the resurrection and the life. Notice what he doesn't say. He doesn't say, here's how you get life and here's how you get resurrection. He says, no. I am it. He doesn't say, go read a book, go adopt a mindset, go be an influencer, go make sense of your life, go get another successful degree or whatever it is. No. He says, I am the fountain of resurrection and life. And so in this way, I gently want to point out, we can't come to Jesus and say, oh, he was a nice guy that told us to be compassionate and loving to our neighbors, which he did. But he, in this moment, is saying, I am God. I am God. It's not just weeping at death, but now he's saying, I am God incarnate, God with skin on, and I embody resurrection and life. So John chapter 11 is all about Lazarus. It's about his death. It's about his resurrection. But all of this moment is a foreshadowing to Jesus' own death and his resurrection. I'm reading to you from the Gospel of John. We have four accounts of the life of Jesus, an ancient kind of historical insight into somebody's life. We have four accounts of them. This is John's. John's gospel could be seen as an extended passion narrative, which means just a long view at the last week of Jesus' life, plus a little bit before. So after John 11, Jesus enters Jerusalem and goes to his death. In fact, we get a hint in John chapter 11, verse 8. This is before he comes to Bethany, which is where Lazarus has died, which is 2 miles out of Jerusalem. In verse 8, his disciples, in thinking of going to Judea, the province where Bethany is, they say, "But Rabbi, a short while ago, the Jews there tried to stone you, and yet you're going back?" In other words, you are marching towards death, Jesus. Why go? Stay here. But where does Jesus go? He goes to Bethany, and then he goes to Jerusalem. And in Jerusalem, he faces what his whole life's purpose and mission was, which was his own death at the hands of the Romans. That death was coming. And so the death of Jesus, we see Jesus suffering and experiencing all of the effects of this bad news world, all of the effects of what we would call sin. That yes, Jesus' perfect love, entering into the suffering of humanity and this funeral, but also entering into the suffering in his own death. He is perfect love, and yet he is bloodied. And the last moments of Jesus' life, the last few days of Jesus' life, are unjust trials between the Jewish and Roman officials. He is scourged with a cat of nine tails at the hands of Roman executioners. They did this for a living. Jesus has to take his own cross, and he is nailed to the cross, and he hangs there for 6 hours, suffocating to death as he hangs there bleeding out. And just as any human does, Jesus breathed his last. Death, decay, decline, rotting, dead, disfigured. That he takes all of the bad news of the world, all of these realities of dysfunction and decay upon himself. Why? Why does he do this? This is what we reflect on Good Friday. Because we see him dying our death. Our death, that the consequence of sin is death. And here we see Jesus as a human experiencing it to the fullest, but as God as well, the atoning sacrifice for sin. And he takes on our death, our dysfunction, our anger, our lies, our addictions, our divorce, our hate, our past, our trauma, our wounds, our hurts, and our secrets with him in his death. That the weight of sin, of this dysfunction and the evil and the guilt of our world, he takes it on himself in his death. John Calvin, the great reformer in the 16th century, thinking about the death of Jesus, he says, "Jesus was sold to buy us back. Jesus was made captive so that we could be delivered. Jesus was condemned so that we could be absolved. That Jesus was made a curse so that we could be blessed." And this is what happens in the death of Jesus. More bad news. The day, Good Friday, the day that humanity murdered God. And if that's where the story ends, this is another false Jewish Messiah like many that came before him. But here's what theologians call the great reversal. The great reversal that once Jesus enters the tomb, life comes again to his body on the third day, Sunday morning, that Jesus is historically and bodily resurrected. That this is a great reversal of the decay and the decline and the death. The death that Lazarus has experienced in the tomb, Jesus also experienced, but not forever, because he was raised to new life. And so the resurrection of Lazarus in John 11 is pointing to the resurrection of Jesus just a few chapters later. And by resurrecting to new life, Jesus then offers forgiveness for you and for I because of the sin that we have in our life, both we see out there in a macro scale, but also the micro as well. So instead, listen to me, instead of decay, decline, and death, Jesus' resurrection gives us renewal, restoration, and revitalization. That all of the bad news can be changed to good. And the resurrection, when Jesus says, "I am the resurrection," the first clause, "I am the resurrection," when he says this, he's referencing an event, the resurrection is an event that has happened. So think about it this way. You get into your car, you're going home, you've had a long work day, you've just picked up your kid, whatever, and you're going home, you turn on the radio, and the anchor on the radio tells you about an accident that is on your route on the way home. And what they're saying is, hey, this is an event that has happened in the past. It doesn't matter how you feel about it. It doesn't matter your emotions or your thoughts. But this is an event that has happened. And the question is, will you now reroute in order to miss this accident? This is an event that has happened in the past. And this is what Christianity is offering to you. This is an event that's happened 2,000 years ago. You may have your thoughts. You may have your questions. Explore those. But this is what Christianity claims, that this is what happened. And the question is, will you now reroute your life because of it? And I want to point out, this idea that this is an event that has happened for you, you simply need to acknowledge and accept its reality in your life, is unique amongst the world's religions, both secular as well as religious. Ideology, secular and religious, because here's what you're going to get. They promise a flourishing life. They promise a joyful life. And here's how they say it. Other religions and ideologies, secular and religious, will say this. Here's what you got to do. Here's what you got to do. You got to read this book. You got to say this prayer. You got to go to this place. You got to behave in this way, that you have to change the outward, you have to modify your own behavior, and then maybe you can attain this good and flourishing life. And what it ends up doing is just saying, pull yourself up by your bootstraps and try your hardest. That is what you are offered. But Christianity, listen to me, Christianity in the marketplace of ideas and religions is unique because it says, look, this has already happened for you. You cannot do it yourself. It has already happened, and you simply need to acknowledge and receive and believe that this has happened. And so the resurrection is the grand lights flashing start here of Christianity. The Bible is even clear. If the historical bodily resurrection of Jesus never happened, you can just simply ignore this. Turn me off your screen right now. Turn me off, because if it never happened, just don't worry about anything else. And in this way, Christianity is falsifiable. You can just say, you know what, forget it. Jesus did not rise from the dead. And so what that means is that you may have lots of questions, and good questions, about Christianity, its teaching, its history, the church. But before you get to all of those things, start with the resurrection. Because if he didn't rise from the dead, who cares? Just move on. If he did, though, is he the type of God that could speak into some of these things that you may have problems with? So we want to be a church that enters into your questions about Christianity. And so what we've done is we've actually just released season 3 of our podcast, where I host amazing guests, and we tackle some of these big questions maybe that you have of Christianity. You can go get those wherever you get your podcast. One of the things I would just highlight is we released this past week, an interview with Dr. Gary Habermas. Now, Habermas is one of the world's leading experts on the historical resurrection of Jesus. He has defended it in secular universities. In the late 70s, he defended the historical bodily resurrection at the University of Michigan and got his PhD in it. He has debated atheists on this. He is an expert, and I sat down with him for over an hour talking about, did Jesus actually rise from the dead? Go check that out. Also, I want to invite you this Wednesday, I am hosting an Ask Anything night on Zoom. I'm bringing a former colleague of mine, friend of mine, Dr. David Wood, well-read, well-versed, articulate, and we're going to host you on Zoom with some of your questions of Christianity. This is for you if you are a skeptic. It's also for you if you're a believer. You just have questions maybe about Christianity, the Bible, evil, suffering, God, character, all that sort of stuff, or even KAC. We want to be available to help you along wherever you're at in your journey. Jesus says, I am the resurrection. He also says, I am the life. I am the life. See, the resurrection changes everything. It's not just a crutch that you hold on to at the end of your life, but rather it is an opportunity to live a new life today. If the resurrection of Jesus happened, what it offers you is a relationship with God Almighty through the sacrifice of Jesus, that the Spirit of God is sent into your life to renew, revitalize, and restore your life and your existence. How? Not through outward behavior modification, as cold-hearted religion would say, but this is a relationship with God through Jesus. That this isn't just another thing to control you or oppress you or make your life boring and black and white. Rather, this is a dynamic relationship with God through Jesus. And how this happens, how this change happens, is not through just behavior modification, but a changing of your heart. It's a changing of what you love ultimately. It's a stopping of chasing rainbows and the next big thing and finding your joy and your satisfaction in God. That is how a life today can be changed. And this is the good news. So it's not just about changing your behavior. It's more than that. It's about changing your heart. So decay and decline are now reversed in the great reversal. In a macro sense, what Christianity offers the world in a macro sense is you see all of the mess of the world. Its agenda is unique and ambitious because it says Christianity wants to change the human heart. It wants to change the human heart, not just outward policies which matter and need to be changed, but the human heart needs to change. It needs to be restored. Sin needs to be forgiven. And that's Christianity's agenda. If you think of a lake that is toxic, well, what do? You go to the tributaries that made that lake toxic. And that's what Christianity says. Heal the heart and you heal the world. And the decay and decline that you see there, but is also in our life. Our anger and our hurts and our wounds from the past, that the forgiveness of Jesus and his presence comes into our life and brings restoration. That instead of anxiety that comes from our lack of control, we have peace because our life is found in the life of Jesus, who is eternal and will not change. That the negative self-worth and script that I'm worthless and that I'm a failure, that has changed because if God died for you, your life is precious and of utmost worth to him. That this changes your life. And what I would say is the resurrection can make you the type of person that can live through a pandemic with a different sense of peace than you have right now. He can't change these circumstances or maybe your circumstances, but he can make you that type of person. And the great reversal of the resurrection also offers us the reversal of death itself. That death doesn't have the last word. That Jesus' death put death to death. So Christianity believes that there's something immaterial about you. How much does your brain weigh? You could weigh that on a scale. How much does your liver weigh? You can weigh that on a scale. How much does a memory weigh? You can't weigh that. How much does a thought weigh? You can't weigh that. Philosophers, scientists, how much does consciousness weigh? You can't weigh that. Why? Because there's something immaterial about you that will live forever. And your life was meant to live with Jesus today and forever. And this is the great reversal. So listen to me. Here's what Jesus offers you today. In the worst circumstances, they can be changed, and the greatest hurts can be used to build a stronger, better you in relationship with God through Jesus. That there can be beauty in the ashes and new growth in devastation. That justice is an actual thing that we need to do as Christians, and it can happen. That there can be purpose in suffering. That the negative self-scripts can be rewritten. That this is it. And how do you get it? It's the question that Jesus ends with when he's talking to Martha. Do you believe this? Do you believe this? Do you appropriate this into your life? Not just a doctrinal, yes, I believe it, but do you feel this and experience this in your life? So here's what I'd say if you're a skeptic. Love that you're here. Here's what I'd say. Even if you're a skeptic, even if you don't believe this, you want this to be true. You want this to be true because this, as J.R. Tolkien would say, this is the myth that is true. This is the fairy tale that is true because Jesus is alive today. I love how this scene ends. In verse 38 of John 11, it says, Jesus, once more deeply moved, came to the tomb. It was a cave with a stone laid across the entrance. Take away the stone, Jesus said. But Lord, said Martha, the sister of the dead man, by this time there is a bad odor, for he has been there for 4 days. Then Jesus said, did I not tell you that if you believe, you will see the glory of God, that your life, you are going to be blown away at this moment if you just wait to see what I am about to do. He comes to this grave. He is with us in it, but he is also over it as well. And I love this. In verse 43, it says, when he had said this, Jesus called in a loud voice, Lazarus, come out. He speaks into the tomb, into the bad news, into the decay, the decline, and the death, and he speaks life into it. He speaks life into it. And I believe this Easter, in our world of bad news right now, Jesus is calling some of you by name. Come out of your experience of the rot and the decrease and the death. Come out into a new life today and forevermore. Come out of your addiction. Come out of your relapse. Come out of your divorce. Come out of the negative scripts. Come out of your idolatry. Come out of all of these things that keep you bound. Come out into a new life. And he is calling you by name in a loud voice. He's calling you by name this Easter into a life of hope and restoration because of what he has done for you on the cross. Then he says at the end, he says, the dead man came out, his hands and feet wrapped with strips of linen and a cloth around his face. Jesus said to them, take off the grave clothes and let him go. I want to say that to you, take off the grave clothes, come out of wherever you are and live a new life if you believe. Imagine Lazarus's story from here on in. Just sitting down at Starbucks, people come in, hey, tell me about you. Well, I once was dead, but now I'm alive. Imagine that story. People are like, what? Tell me more. What the heck happened? His testimony is forever changed. I once was, but I am now. And the story of every believer in Jesus Christ is that story. I once was, but I am now. I once lived in a bad news world, but because of the resurrection of Jesus, there is hope, that there is life change. So my story, man, I once was addicted, but I now live in freedom without shame. And this can be your story today. If you're a believer, I want you to recite that story this Easter weekend. I once was, but I am now because of the ministry of Jesus in my life. That transformation can happen. That the great reversal of the resurrection can be yours in your life as well. And this has been true of followers of Jesus all the way from the beginning. See, the earliest followers of Jesus, the ones who abandoned Jesus at his death and his crucifixion, were the ones afterwards who saw him resurrected, who believed in his name, who went to their own death with his message and his ministry. I could recite to you of every single one of the earliest followers of Jesus, how they gave their lives in exchange for the life that Jesus gave them. All the way through history, this has been true. That they were turned from cowards into courageous disciples. And we are seeing that even today in our church. We just facilitated a process called Genesis Process. It's a program that facilitates life change at our church. And you're going to hear some stories of real life people today who are saying, I once was and I am now. So the question for you this Easter weekend is a question that Jesus poses to Martha. Do you believe this? Do you believe this? And if so, what will you do with it? The worst reaction is one of apathy. Oh, this is good. This is a nice cultural suburban Kamloops tradition for us, and you move on. Look, this is either true or it is ridiculous. This either changes your life or pick it outside our church because this is an absolute lie. It cannot be in between. Do you believe this yourself? And if so, what will you do with it? Enjoy.